From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, a look inside a recent assembly hearing on the governor's economic development programs, a conversation about the relationship between the governor and the mayor of New York City between our political observer Alan Shartok and Daily News Albany Bureau Chief Ken Lovett, and our Pat Bradley speaks with 21st District House Republican Elise Stefanik. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A routine oversight hearing held earlier this month by the State Assembly turned testy when Governor Cuomo's economic development czar, Howard Zemsky, endured over 2 hours of questions about Governor Cuomo's economic development programs, which are currently under federal investigation. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
And I welcome the chance to discuss the overall impact of the New York State budget on the state's economic development efforts.
Zemsky answered questions for over 2 hours from Democratic and Republican assembly members. They wanted to know why the economic development program known as Startup, which offers a 10-year tax break for new high-tech businesses who locate on college campuses, is seeming to take so long to begin. A report issued at the start of the July 4th weekend found that just 408 jobs have been created so far, though state officials predict thousands more new positions will eventually come. Assemblywoman Addie Russell, a Democrat from Watertown, called the results paltry, and she says it comes as the state university system has been severely underfunded.
I'm not sure if we should be doing a complete rethink of where this program is housed and how it is operated, because, you know, frankly, if you continue to starve SUNY, I don't know how you expect them to be able to be a full and robust partner in leveraging what's going on their campuses.
Zemsky told the assembly members that it's too early to judge Startup, and he continued that argument outside the hearing, speaking with reporters, saying, take a deep breath and give the program some time.
How do you realistically oppose the combination of industry and academia in the state of New York? I think ultimately we just give it some more time. We've put the framework in place to succeed, and I think we'll change those perceptions when we just continue to show steady progress in job creation.
The state controller has also issued several audits that are critical of the Cuomo administration's economic development programs. Controller Tom DiNapoli, who, like Cuomo, is also a Democrat, has not always had a good relationship with the governor. DiNapoli has questioned the value of a $50 million advertising campaign promoting Startup. The controller also found a lack of oversight of the Excelsior Jobs program, saying economic development officials could not verify whether companies actually create the number of jobs they promised, and in some cases could not even justify why the businesses were granted the tax breaks in the first place. Zemsky says the negative audits are misleading and unfair.
The audit that I'm familiar with, I think, did not really paint a proper picture of the Excelsior tax credit program. And I think that was unfortunate.
Controller DiNapoli, speaking in July when the audit was released, questioned the larger concept of the overall worth of the economic development programs.
At the end of the day, many of these programs do cost a lot of money. And might that those monies be better spent on, rather than, you know, targeting certain businesses? You know, one of the things we hear from the business community is the cost of doing business overall is very high in New York. Could some of these programs be, instead of targeting specific businesses, be done in a way that would benefit all businesses in terms of relieving some costs, perhaps relieving some regulations.
Looming over everything is the ongoing federal corruption probe by U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. Zemsky admitted, under questioning from assembly members, that some recent payments to key economic development programs, including the giant solar city plant in Buffalo, have been delayed due to increased scrutiny over contracts now that the feds are investigating. Governor Cuomo has also hired his own private investigator to review all of the contracts.
We have extra process, so, you know, we clearly have more scrutiny, further layers of protection and review, so that's going to take some getting used to.
But Zemsky says he hopes the probe by the U.S. attorney is now coming to a close and his agency can move on from that. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
This week, we feature a conversation between the Legislative Gazette's political observer, Alan Chartok, and Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. In this segment, they talk about what Lovett reports is the latest sign of the strained relationship between Governor Andrew Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, which starts in the Bronx.
So we're seeing, through your stories, by the way, that Andrew Cuomo has been showering the Bronx with money as a possible sign that he wants Borough President Ruben Diaz to run for mayor. Governor Cuomo has put more than $1.2 billion into the Bronx economy since 2011. Much of that has come in the last 2 years as he's gone after, locked horns with Mayor de Blasio. Fill us in.
Well, exactly that the Bronx has gotten per capita more money than any other borough in New York City since the governor has taken office. Certainly it needs it. It has a lot of problems. And the governor's people naturally say, this is not about politics. This is all about helping a community of need that has high unemployment rate, that has high asthma rates, all these kinds of things. And it is true that they started certain programs that were to help the Bronx before the mayor and the governor started really openly warring, which was last year. However, the bulk of the money has flowed since the war began. And it's no secret that Ruben Diaz Jr. is close to the governor. He was a co-chairman of his election campaign. And certainly the governor would love to see Ruben Diaz take him on. Whether he will or not, we don't know. But at the very least, it's kind of a torturing of the mayor that the governor seems to like to do. We should also point out, too, that the extra funding kind of, you know, dates to when Carl Hastie became Assembly Speaker, who is from the Bronx.
He was the boss of the Bronx, right?
He was the boss of the Bronx, and so that doesn't hurt either. But certainly, you know, we've seen the governor hold events with Ruben Diaz, without the mayor, praising Ruben Diaz as someone who gets things done. And let's not forget, the governor and his people have criticized the mayor for being all talk, and it's about getting things done. It's not about a debate society. So it's not so subtle digs at the mayor, and it's no surprise that money is flowing to the Bronx.
Well, Ken Lovett, there are two ways we can go here. Let's start by asking, okay, can Ruben Diaz beat Mayor de Blasio in a primary?
It would be very difficult. I think there, you know, he's one of the names that's been out there, but let's face it, de Blasio's numbers, as bad as they are, he still has the unions. He still has much of the African-American vote that is important in this. So he hasn't bottomed out yet. And certainly there are others out there as well who are named a representative, a Congressman Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn, Scott Stringer, the city comptroller. Diaz isn't well known outside the Bronx, so that would be an issue as well. But certainly, being someone who's Hispanic, he could put up a fight. And if the mayor, depending on what happens with Preet Bharara and these investigations, if he's hurt further, Diaz's name is one that would be in the mix, no doubt about it.
Yeah. So, of course, the fact that Diaz is Hispanic has got to be very important to Governor Cuomo.
Absolutely. Look, the governor has had issues with the minority community over the years. But as Hank Sheinkoff, a veteran Democratic operative, said to me, and someone who had worked for the governor in the past, his campaign, said, you know, this whole thing about funding the Bronx is a win-win-win for the governor. Because whether or not he is really trying to use Diaz to take out the mayor, certainly, A, it helps an area in need, which the Bronx is definitely in need.
Sure.
You know, B, it helps the governor with a minority population that he's also had issues with. And C, it tortures the mayor. So for the governor, win, win, win.
Let's go there. I've asked you this 15 times, but do we really know what is motivating this hatred from the part of Governor Cuomo towards de Blasio?
Look, at first when this started, we were told this was going to be a completely different relationship. There's always tension between a mayor and a governor. Mayors always resent that they head the biggest city in the world, and yet they have to go hat in hand to Albany for everything, whether it's to raise local taxes, for school funding, everything. So there's always that natural tension. You know, the mayor's looking out for the city, a governor looks out for the whole state. So that's there. But we were told this was going to be different, that the governor and de Blasio are longtime friends, that, you know, de Blasio worked for the governor when the governor was HUD secretary under Bill Clinton. So we were said that even though there may be tensions, it will never get personal. The governor, from really day one, there's been issues between the two. It started with the mayor pushing to raise taxes locally on the rich so he could fund his pre-K initiative. The governor, right out of the gate, said, "We're going to give you all the money you need," but it was an election year for the governor, but we're not going to raise taxes.
So let me stop you right there, just in terms of historical fact-checking here. Did he give them all the money he needed for pre-K?
Yeah, there's been no complaints that they've underfunded the city, and even de Blasio will say they have the money. But the de Blasio wanted the rich to pay more, so that started. Then there were spats over charter schools. The governor is for them. The mayor really doesn't like them.
And that got really ugly.
And that got ugly. They held dueling rallies at one point, but it still never got personal.
Until, I thought that was pretty personal when the charter thing.
But where really, the governor does not have a reputation of playing well in the sandbox with others. So whether it's Tom DiNapoli, state comptroller, whether it's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, or whether it's Mayor de Blasio, even though they were friends, the governor, you know, he wants to be the alpha dog, and that's what he does. And I thought there would have been a turning point when the governor looked like he was going to lose the Working Families Party endorsement in 2014, the backing. He was really saved by the mayor, who had a lot of input. He went in and really worked out a deal that helped the WFP endorse Cuomo, which was a big deal. I thought maybe the governor would back off a little. He didn't. And then it really exploded publicly when the mayor last year in June, at the end of the legislative session, ripped the governor personally. He says he operates by vendetta, that he's out to, you know, hurt the city.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
But he said it. That was inexcusable to the governor, and for the last really year plus.
Inexcusable to tell the truth?
And for the last year plus, the governor has gone out of his way to really publicly embarrass the mayor. And I think, you know, some of this stuff now with Ruben Diaz is part of that.
Okay. But one more time, and then I'll leave it alone. But if you've been watching this for as long as we have, and people write in the papers all the time, these two men don't get along, they don't like each other, this and that. But in fact, I think Cuomo was the bully and de Blasio was on the receiving end. Am I wrong?
I think de Blasio has taken his shots. I don't think anyone's
clean
here.
But only in defense,
right? No, there were times, like, you know, even at the convention in Philly, he took some shots at the governor, you know, where he said, oh, the governor has been more, you know, on the side of liberal issues now, but it really, you know, he had to come to it. You know, some of the things he said.
Well, that was right.
But some of the things he said were seen as direct shots at him. And so I think neither are pure, but the governor has the biggest hammer. And the truth is, if you throw a rock at the governor, he's going to come back at you with a bazooka. A lot of people feel that de Blasio's biggest error was he attacked the governor so hard, and then he went away on vacation for a week. And then when he came back, he wouldn't go back to the issue. People would ask him about it, the reporters, and he'd say, well, I don't want to talk about that anymore. And the governor just pounded him, and not only pounded him with words, but even with actions, and really started courting some of people who should have been allies to the governor, including the city council speaker, Melissa Mark Viverito. And so in some ways, the fight with the mayor has focused the governor more, because now he's less at odds with a lot of the Democratic establishment than he had been, although the last few weeks he's kind of gone back to his old tricks and has been warring with DiNapoli again and with the legislature. And so he had been trying to kind of tamp down those kind of battles and really focus all his energies on the mayor. But now he's kind of gone back to that the last few weeks.
That's Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, speaking with Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Residents in Albany's South End public housing complex heard from a top environmental official last week and shared their growing concerns about diesel truck traffic and the presence of nearby Global Partners, which transports Bakken crude oil by railroad tracks that buffer the apartments. Legislative Gazette Steve Lucas was at the town hall meeting at Albany's Ezra Prentice Homes. Afterward, he spoke with Aaron Mayer, the national president of the 2.4 million member strong Sierra Club. Mayer sees the residents' struggle in Albany and other municipalities around New York with air and noise pollution at the expense of quality of life as a glaring example of what some call environmental racism.
As they're trying to facilitate getting oil from the Bakken fields to the market, they have to come through the port. And as an immediate consequence, residents who literally are on the fence line, there's a fence that separates them and the railroad tracks, a distance of approximately 30 to 40 feet, you will find these residents are waking up all hours of the evening with the coupling and decoupling of the trains. But more importantly, the venting, or what they call burping, when it comes to opening the tops or the hatches, they have no air conditioning. So when they open their windows, benzene, you know, raw benzene fumes are blowing into their homes. The symptomatology of asthma and elevated respiratory illness is a major indicator that people are being impacted by this benzene. But unfortunately, when they did the analysis that allowed Global to expand here, Global in its permit and application said that there was no environmental justice impacts, no environmental justice effects. In fact, they didn't even acknowledge that there was an environmental justice community here. So when we talk about environmental racism, the fact that the application went forward without state, local, or other officials flagging that, wait a minute, we know that this is one of the largest, poorest sections of the city, and it's predominantly African-American, and they are already saturated with a lot of industrial facilities and tractor-trailer facilities all around. How can there not be an environmental justice impact? But somehow this application got through.
You sat through the whole meeting today.
Yeah.
Now it's over. How do you feel? Have we made any progress? Are we going forward? Is this going to be a better resolution than we would have expected?
Well, two things. We're here because the community organized. The poorest of the poor communities had organized and came together. And as you heard, this process has been going on from permitting to where they are right now with new permits, increased permits, since 2011. Contrast the response of government to this community vis-a-vis the PFOA issue over in Rensselaer County, how quick they were able to respond within the documentation of contamination of PFOA in groundwater. This has been dragging on for years. And so even though we are seeing a response, it is by no means a complete or a full response. Right now, you're having officials talking about what the agencies can and do and what their limitations are. What's not being talked about is that, you know, these laws are set up this way so that agencies really cannot be responsive. And here's the other piece. At the point in which this community is trying to find out, look, what do I do relative to my air quality and relative to my apartment, relative to this train? And they're saying, well, listen, we're not the ones responsible. We got to go to the transportation authority, and then we will have to make a special appeal through them. How is that type of response or action going to be for the next child that has an asthma attack, or the next adult that has some respiratory illness, or some, as they say, some physical response to some fugitive emission? Unfortunately, the issue of the complexity of who's in charge, which is really what's delineated here, vis-a-vis actionable responses to the immediate crisis that people are living with here daily, was totally missed. And so there's a huge disconnect between what happens between now and the next incident or episode relative to somebody becoming ill as a result of, as they say, a fugitive release or a potential spill. Contacting and trying to assess whether it's a transportation authority, EPA, DOT, or DEC, that kind of chain of command is not the instantaneous response people want. And they want the same response as Hoosick Falls, where people came in, they had a complaint, their blood was tested, they did a workup. A lot of people were naturally talking about that the air caused cancer. And again, these are folks who don't really know that the risk of cancer is everybody carries it. The issue is, what are the environmental triggers? And so what's not said is that there's no volunteering of the fact that there needs to be much more complicated epidemiological model testing for these residents here. There is a toxic cocktail of emissions coming out of the Port of Albany. And maybe no one piece is, as they say, a contributor to a cancer risk, but the combination of them may be a significant contributor. And we don't know how people's risk, because everybody carries their burden of risk. And a child may not present it now, but the child may present a cancer outbreak due to its exposure right now. So what needs to be done is the health monitoring of this community. What needs to be done is a much more sophisticated analysis of the cumulative effects and the cumulative impact of layering in different classes of toxins and emissions here at the Port of Albany. The fact that people are saying that they come in and moving into this area, they have upper respiratory illness, and when they move out, they don't have it, is a clear indicator that much more sophisticated monitoring needs to be done. And granted, the soil may not be the case or the place where you want to test, but you need to be honest with the people and say, well, look, we need to have a real 360 response team down here of agencies to start really looking at what this community is facing.
That's Sierra Club National President Aaron Mayer speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik represents the sprawling 21st House District of Northern New York that includes all or part of 12 counties. The first-term Republican faces re-election this fall and has been traveling across the more than 16,000-square-mile district during the summer break. She recently sat down with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley and talked about a number of issues, beginning with a look at her efforts to help communities obtain federal grants.
Some communities were having difficulty applying for federal grants, and it can be a very onerous process. So one of the ideas that I had to make this easier is my staff put together a federal grants guide, which I released, and it's available to every organization, every local elected leader in the district. And we've had a lot of success helping and working hand in hand with local elected officials or organizations applying for federal grants.
Obviously, it is campaign season. What are you hearing as you are out on the campaign trail?
I'm hearing very, very positive feedback. I think the message of bringing a new generation of leadership and delivering results, which I have done on a bipartisan basis in my first term in Congress, has really resonated. I'm hearing very positive results from Republicans, from independents, and just the past couple of days, I've had many Democrats who come up to me and say, you can count on my vote this November.
Elise Stefanik, your opponent, Mike Derrick, has been critical of your position on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And today in the press, the Green candidate, Mr. Funicello, has been critical of your position on arms sales. How do you respond to their criticisms?
Sure. So my opponent, the Democratic nominee in this district, has no ideas of his own and clearly does not know the difference between Trade Promotion Authority and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I voted for TPA, which provides transparency for any trade deal. It requires any trade deal to be made public for 90 days. TPP will not come up for a vote this Congress. I have specific problems and concerns with this version of TPP.
That's 21st District Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1635 or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.